Parles-tu français?
Hablas español?
Parle italiano.
If you've used Babbel, you would. Babbel's conversation-based technique teaches you useful words and phrases to get you speaking quickly about the things you actually talk about in the real world. With lessons handcrafted by over 200 language experts and voiced by real native speakers, Babbel is like having a private tutor in your pocket. Start speaking with Babbel today. Get up to 55% off your Babbel subscription right now at babbel.com/listen. Spelled babbel.com/listen. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Are you really buying a car online on AutoTrader right now?
Really?
At a playground?
Yeah, really. Look at these listings from dealers.
Wow, your search can really get that specific.
Really?
And you just put in your info and boom, car's in your budget.
Mom
needs a second, honey.
You can really have it delivered?
Really, or I can pick it up at the dealership.
Mom!
One sec, sweetie.
Mommy's buying a car.
Mommy, look!
I think your kid is walking up the slide.
Kyle, again? Really?
AutoTrader. Buy your car online. Really?
WFAN to your contacts to talk New York sports with us at 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS live on Paramount Plus.
If you heard this song playing at Shea Stadium, you knew what it meant. Some damage was about to happen to the opposing pitcher as we welcome in Mike Piazza to the show. BT and Sal on the Fan. Mike, thank you so much for taking the time to join us. How are you today?
I'm good, guys. How are you?
Oh,
a little
great.
Better after a win last night.
Oh.
Getting a little tight at the end, but we got through it.
Oh, that was a great win, Mike. Any win over the Yankees, as you know, is a great one for the Mets. You were somebody, yeah. One of the reasons why I loved you when you first got here was because you were somebody who thrived in the Subway Series. Do you have a favorite moment in particular, and what was it about the Subway Series that brought out the best in you?
Well, I think first off, just the intense emotion of those games. And I personally really enjoyed playing in Yankee Stadium as a visiting player. I mean, the only way before interleague play, obviously, would have been the World Series. And we all know how difficult it is to win a World Series, let alone get there as well. So I loved it. I mean, it was something for me. It just really triggered me and really ignited my competitiveness. And let's be honest, the season itself is a marathon. So anytime you can use something in the middle of a season to really bring up your intensity and your emotion was something that I enjoyed. And as players, we really enjoyed it kind of maybe pre-social media era, where it was just you're watching the news stories about the houses divided, you know, the civil wars. Like, my dad's a Yankees fan and my brother's a Mets fan, and we just enjoyed that. But one particular moment, I mean, obviously the home run, you know, with the Matty Franco pinch hit game, I think was probably one of the coolest times because it was just so intense. It was a national game, that televised game, and just squared that ball up pretty well. So it was a great game, and obviously I crushed that ball, so it was fun.
Mike, it's good to have you on, man. I want to actually, just for a second, because we're going to be obviously New York heavy here, but I want to take you back to the beginning of your journey. This is fascinating to me because, in my opinion, you probably won't say this, I'll say it for you. There's different levels of the Hall of Fame. You're in the top level. You're one of the all-time greatest catchers. There's just no doubt. I mean, you hit 350. I mean, it's just crazy what you did. And yet, you know, we know the story. Been drafted as a favor, if you will, 62nd round. And the scouts, they got the stopwatch. What do you run, the 60? What's the pop time? I understand that scouting is subjective, but how can you do what you did as a pro and be so wildly, irresponsibly overlooked by so many scouts during the formative stage of your baseball development? How does that happen?
Well, I think when I was a kid, and it probably is still prevalent today, they used to tell us catching and left-handed pitching was the quickest way to the big leagues. And I think being a slow-footed first baseman in high school, and granted, I mean, I had some good years in high school and junior college before I converted to catcher. But I think just once I started catching and then continue to mature and then go into the Dodgers system that had incredible coaching. I mean, I had Johnny Roseborough as my catching coach and Kevin Kennedy and Reggie Smith as my hitting coach. So in high school and junior college, I did have some ability, but I think it just really took off because I was in the right place at the right time. I switched positions because the Dodgers had signed Henry Rodriguez, if you remember him, mm-hmm. and Eric Karros. And I went to instructional league and they said, listen, if you don't do another change positions, you're going home. So
wow.
It was kind of like, wow. I better change positions. Yeah. So I think just having perfect timing, the right instruction, and the right coaching, and just was able to continue to refine my hitting. And just, again, it's a crooked path, but nonetheless, I would take it, no question.
And obviously, it culminates, it didn't culminate in New York, but, I mean, you did end up a Met, and it was a weird road to get there. The fallout with the Dodgers, yeah. trading you to the Marlins. When you first got traded to New York, because you were going through hell, I'm assuming, right? With all the stuff that went with L.A. and then getting traded from there, you didn't know that New York was going to be the final destination at that time. Where were you at mentally after what went down to the Dodgers, then the Marlins, and then to New York?
Yeah, it was tough. I mean, I tell people all the time, what a culture shock, because it went from living on the beach in California and walking down to the beach volleyball championships and, you know, having some breakfast and then going to the ballpark in a very laid back environment and excelling. That, I mean, I think at that time in my life, I mean, can you imagine coming up as a rookie in Los Angeles and making a little money and living on the beach and all the fun?
Yeah,
part of
we
that
can,
is,
Mike.
Of that is,
we can only imagine it. You did it.
Us.
I have the record. I didn't pay for a beer in 2 years at Harry O's in Manhattan Beach. So let's just say it was a fun time. We really enjoyed it. And then having that contract, as you said, having that fallout and then being traded. And I remember going on the plane to St. Louis where the Marlins were, and I'm just saying to myself, what did I just do? What just happened here? And then eventually going to New York and being in the pressure cooker that was the Big Apple. But I think in the beginning, of course, I mean, we probably know the story. I wouldn't say I necessarily struggled. I just wasn't driving in the big runs. And I think the fans expected more, and I expected more out of myself. And it just, I think it transformed me and made me into more of an intense player, made me understand how appreciative I have to be of what I have and try to seize the moment. And just at the end of the day, in my heart, I realized I had to go all in New York,
mm-hmm.
and eventually was embraced and had some great years and had some great teams and amazing teammates. So it was a dream come true. And even though there was moments of frustration, you're always going to go through the roller coaster here emotionally. That's just part of being in the Big Apple. And so it was the greatest time of my life. It's something I'll obviously never forget.
We're talking to Hall of Famer Mike Piazza, 12 All-Stars, 10 silver sluggers. Insane. All right, so Mike, Soto's Soto. Torres is Torres, on the opposite end of the spectrum here. I'm talking about players who are chasing new contracts, right? And obviously, from the Mets' perspective, which is what I'm most interested in for you, is Pete. You know, trying to compartmentalize, digging into the box and hitting that blur that's moving 95, often 100 now, and it's moving,
yeah.
and you got people cheering and booing, and you're talking to your agent during the day. How do you think so far Pete has handled this contract year?
Isn't it crazy that America is turning 250 years old? I mean, look how far we've come. Now, we've got coolers in our sofas, light-up cup holders, and power-articulating headrests. When it comes to furniture worthy of this major milestone, Bob's Discount Furniture has all the styles all of America wants at the everyday low prices we deserve, backed by tons of five-star reviews. Check out the Sedona Power Reclining Sofa, a genuine leather one-stop shop for relaxation with built-in charging, cup holders, and supportive bobopedic seats, perfect for lounging in the AC all day. You can even complete the look with the matching love seat and recliner. Throwing summer parties? The HomeWorks dining set features comfy bobopedic seating and clever storage built right into the table and bench. Or Customize your space with the customer favorite modular Bob Sectional. It has over 1,000 five-star reviews, family-proof construction, and wireless charging for hundreds less than the competition. At only $250 per piece, building your dream sectional is incredibly affordable. Celebrate the 4th at Bob's. It's where America shops for furniture.
At DSW, we ask the important questions, like, what shoes are you going to wear? Whether you're prepping for wedding season, festival season, or just planning the ultimate vacay, the right shoes can make or break an RSVP. So own the moment. You've got big plans, and we've got just the shoes. At the perfect price, of course. Get ready to get ready with Designer Shoe Warehouse. Head to your DSW store or DSW.com today, and let us surprise you.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Personal finance can feel like a pop quiz you didn't study for. This podcast is your study guide. On NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast, you'll hear from trusted journalists who explain the why behind major financial decisions. You'll get research-backed insights and clear pros and cons, whether you're planning a big purchase or just want to grow your wealth. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
Well, it's difficult for me to say because you can't look inside a guy's head and seeing what he's thinking and sort of how he's preparing. And personally, again, I can only speculate. We can only speculate. I hope that he's not feeling like he has to overperform. I hope he's not feeling like he has to sort of expand the strike zone and get the big hit every time to sort of earn it. I think when you go out there and you test the market, you're going to be subject to a little pressure. I mean, let's be honest. That's just the way it is. He's playing for a contract, and I was in the same boat. And there was a certain time when I was here, and I just had to kind of understand that we choose the path that we chose, and you got to live life without a rearview mirror and surrender to it. And hopefully he's able to kind of have a good finish and really put the team on his back at times and punch through and get some big hits, because this game is difficult enough just playing without the pressure of a contract. And then obviously being in New York, it's magnified even more. So, but at the end of the day, listen, I'm also a believer in faith and fate. And if it's meant to be, it's going to happen. Unfortunately, sometimes change in life is difficult. I've been through it, and I hope that because again, guys that hit, you know, capable of hitting 50 home runs, 45 home runs, just don't, they're not walking down the street. So he's a special player when he's on top of his game. And I hope, and because he came up through the Mets, he's a Met through and through. I hope they work it out and he's able to put all this behind him and have some great productive years. That's what I'm praying for.
You know, it might not be fair, Mike. We're talking about Mike Piazza. But since you came to the Mets in 98, for me personally, I have judged every top player on the team to what you did. And I refer to them as Piazza-like moments. It could be Alonso, it could be David, right? Whoever it may be. I'm like, I need to see. If you're going to be that star, I want Piazza-like moments. What was it about... I mean, dude, Hoffman, Wagner, the 9/11 stuff, the Subway Series, the Braves home run, and the big comeback off of, who'd you hit that off of? Was it Mulholland at the time? The one you
the ripped, one down the line?
Yeah, that, the one you ripped down the left field. I forget who it was.
Yeah, that was Mulholland.
Yeah, and
hard
I was at,
cutter.
I couldn't, like, yeah, that nice. Went out in a hurry, and the place was nuts. Like, I almost left that game because I can't take the beatings that the Braves are handing this team anymore, but then that comeback, and you finish it off. How the hell were you able to provide so many moments? It seemed every single time. Matter of fact, game five of the 2000 World Series against Rivera, the final out, I thought you got it. I thought it was gone. I left the upper level thinking, I'll see you tomorrow, and I didn't realize that, you know, Bernie was going to catch the ball. But every big moment, maybe except for that one that fell just short, you were able to deliver. How?
I think just preparation. And when I was coming to the ballpark every day, I visualized those moments. And when I teach hitting to kids, I tell these guys, listen, you have got to want to be up in the when the game is on the line. You have got to want to be the man in that situation. And let's be honest, some players shy away from it. Mentally, some guys just can't handle it. And that's just something for me that I had that special gift of hunger, of wanting to be the guy up there with the game on the line. And consequently, it'd also be on the pitching side. I mean, the best pitchers in history are the guys that want to be on the bump when the game is on the line as well. So I don't know. Is it learned or is it just gifted? I have no idea. I mean, it was just something for me. First off, you have to be prepared. So when I was going over the scouting reports and I was looking, I'm like, okay, I'm probably going to get this guy at this point in the game if the game is close. So I did do some homework, if that makes sense. I wasn't just going up there and hoping. When I taught the Italian team in the Classic last year, I say hope is not a strategy. I mean, I say a bad plan is better than no plan at all. So have a plan, be hungry, visualize yourself in those situations, and crave to be in those situations. And, you know, I was taught, as I said, by Reggie Smith, and he used to have this expression. He used to say, oh, hit it like you live, hard and in the alleys. And he said the home run hitters are driving. And this was back, him dating myself, 70s, right? He would say, hey, man, he'd say those home run hitters, they're driving the Cadillacs, baby. And he goes, those singles hitters, they're driving the VWs.
It was
really funny, those expressions. But I learned from that. I mean, that was part of my upbringing, and I learned from the best. And so ultimately, that was what propelled me and helped me get to those moments as well.
And you've had so many of them. And I know a lot of people reference the post 9/11 home run, which I know meant more than just the game, or we could talk about the Yankee stuff as we did. For me, and I've heard you talk about this, whether it would be on SNY with Gary, Keith, and Ron years ago, or in your book, I read about it. I've tweeted you about it. My favorite home run that you ever hit, game 6, 1999 NLCS. Mets were down in the game big. Al Leiter gave it up early on. I think it was 5-0 to Atlanta. Brian Jordan in the inning prior. I don't know if you remember this, BT. I'll never forget it because I watched Piazza like a hawk, so I knew his emotion. I could tell everything. Brian Jordan came in.
I know what you're going to say.
Yeah. Brian Jordan came in and took Mike out when he was standing on home plate to receive a play to get him out. Mm-hmm. He took Mike out with not a dirty slide, but an unnecessary slide. And Mike, you got up. And you had that look that he'd done something wrong. He pissed you off with that slide. You remember what I'm talking about?
I do, and it was funny. I remember for some reason Turk Wendell always plunked Brian Jordan. And I don't know why. And, of course, Brian, being a former football player, is the last guy you want to have coming around third base when you have the ball and there's going to be a play. Yeah, but he absolutely waffled me. I wasn't happy about it. Let's just say that.
Right. And the next inning, and I remember I called my buddy Vin Dyer, I met from watching this game. I go, Mike is going deep. And you took Smoltz deep to right center. I believe it was the next inning, if I'm not mistaken, but shortly thereafter to tie the game with the two-run shot.
Yeah, no, I love facing Johnny. I mean, he was tough and he was competitive and he just kept throwing those hard fastballs and I was timing them. And the fortunate thing for me is I had power at all fields, so I didn't really feel like I had to pull the ball in those situations. But I mean, the old Turner Field, I mean, that was hard. It was starting to get, it was late, obviously, and the air was a little heavy. So to hit the ball, I mean, I squared that ball up pretty good. But you're right. I definitely had a burr in my saddle there. I was not a happy camper. I was not a happy camper. And so I was able to focus that and, yeah, it was a great moment. It was a tough game, man. It was just, we were so spent emotionally, and they're such a great club. They always played well, and they always really played us tough. It was a great rivalry. It was frustrating because we felt like we were really getting momentum in that series, and I think we would have faced Glav the next night.
Mm.
And I think if we could have got through that game, we felt like we would have punched through, and it would have been the first Subway Series, actually, instead of 2000. It would have been probably an interesting one as well if we could have played the Yankees that year.
We're talking to Mike Piazza here, BT and Sal on the Fan. So, you know, Mike, speaking of the whole Met Yankee dynamic, this is fun for us. We draw the lines, and this is my team, and this is my guy, and this is my stadium, and this is my stuff. So as a player, you know, especially for you, when you were here, I mean, the Yankees were, I mean, incredible most of the time. So in the Mets club,
sure.
I mean, was there...
They were great, yeah.
But was it spoken that, like, yeah, you know, these Yankees, like, I don't want to say that you guys felt inferior. I don't mean it like that, but that the yeah. Was that felt in the Met organization?
Well, of course, at that time, there was a big competition, like, for the back pages of the papers. There wasn't social media. So I think maybe, as I've said before, we're kind of dating ourselves. So there was a little bit. And the newness of it, I think, as well, was also kind of prevalent, the actual Subway Series, because interleague play was still fairly new. And I think, I mean, look, we always had respect for their teams. You always have a certain amount of professional respect. And as I've said before, the course of a long season, you do have to keep things in perspective. But I think you'd be lying to say that you wouldn't get up for those games. I mean, if you couldn't get excited for these games, then you should be doing something else. But as far as professional jealousy or sort of like a hatred in the sense that we just didn't we had bad blood, not really. I mean, we had great respect for their players, and they had good teams. And the fact that we felt that these games were really exciting for the city and the fans embraced it.
Imagine you're watching the game at a buddy's house when you get a call that someone tried to break into yours. In a second, everything can change. That's why there's ADT. No one wants to feel unsafe in their own home. ADT security systems help keep your home safe with 24/7 monitoring. The ADT Plus app keeps you in control the whole time. ADT's network is built for those game time moments. They have the most company-operated monitoring centers in the industry. Don't leave your home wide open during an emergency. When every second counts, count on ADT. Visit ADT.com or call 1-800-ADT-ASAP.
The right window treatments change everything. Your sleep, your privacy, the way every room looks and feels. At Blinds.com, we've spent 30 years making it surprisingly simple to get exactly what your home needs. We've covered over 25 million windows and have 50,000 five-star reviews to prove we deliver. Whether you DIY it or want a pro to handle everything from measure to install, we have you covered. Real design professionals, free samples, zero pressure. Right now, get up to 50% off with minimum purchase. Plus, get a free professional measure at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions apply.
Made it even that much more kind of special.
You know, you talk about the Subway Series and the World Series, and I remember I was at Game 2 at Yankee Stadium, and when I tell you, Mike, I legitimately almost jumped out of the upper tier onto the field level to go kill Roger Clemens myself. That's the emotion I was feeling. You were calm, cool, collected, trying to figure out what the hell was going on there. You have any regrets as to how you handled that situation and to what went down there in Game 2 with Clemens throwing that bat toward you?
You know what's funny? As I was talking about this the other day, and as I get further away from it, I think maybe there's different things about that moment kind of come to life, or at least get kind of rekindles my memory. And the weirdest thing about it, because I was thinking, I knew that at that time he was going to start coming in on me and force me to hit the ball inside. Obviously, when he hit me, I mean, I'm sure, I'm lucky I'm alive from that because yeah. I almost took my head off. But from a pitching perspective, I do believe he was going to start coming in more because the pitches I was hitting off him were obviously down and over the plate. And I remember actually Mike Borzello, who was our pitching coach for Italy last year, the WBC, who was with the Yankees with Joe Torre many years, was telling me some stories about it. But putting all that aside, the freakiest thing that I think now is that the bat that I had that night was actually probably had a hairline fracture in it that I didn't really know about, because even though the ball was up and in, rarely you see a bat explode like that. Usually it mm-hmm. just kind of cracks on the handle or just so
splinters
there
up.
Was, I said to myself, everyone's like, do you have any regrets? I go, yeah, I actually regret I didn't take another bat, because maybe that bat had, maybe some C4 in it, inside. So maybe if it didn't, disintegrate like that, that moment would have never happened.
It's funny. Listen, I'm sorry, Mike. Go ahead.
Well, go ahead.
It's funny you say that, because last time I was watching the game in the SNY newsroom with one of your former teammates, Jerry Blevins, and he was saying that you had the thinnest bat handle that he'd ever seen. And last night, after he said that, it was the first time that it jogged my mind as saying, you know what, maybe that's part of the reason why the bat splintered the way that it did at that particular moment.
Yeah, I mean, I used a variation. It's called a C243, which is a Rod Carew. He actually, that actual model was developed by Rod Carew with Louisville, and then I used the Mizuno bat, and I did whittle the handle down a little bit more. So I like the real, like a sledgehammer, you know, like a top-heavy bat. And so, yeah, I mean, but sometimes you just don't know, you know, like you hit one and there could be a hairline fracture in there. You just don't hear. But, yeah, that was a weird thing as well. So I started actually thinking about that. I'm like thinking, man, you know, maybe because generally, as I said, that was just a weird way the bat broke. And it's history. You know, people love to talk about it. Obviously, on a bigger sense, I've said before, the home run I hit against Jeff Nelson in that game is one that will never get attention. But I was talking with Todd Zeal yesterday at an event here, and we were like, I was saying, that's one of my most proud home runs because Jeff Nelson was so difficult on right-hand hitters.
Ugh.
And to kind of think, okay, I'm going to cheat on this pitch and look for an inside fastball, and I got it, hit it off the foul pole. That was something, was a special moment, which will always be overshadowed, unfortunately.
All right, so Mike, I want to bring it back to one more thing about the bat incident. So, you know, Sal asked about the regret, and, you know, you said maybe you had a hairline fracture, and, you know, you wish that you knew that and it wouldn't have splintered. I got that. You're a humble guy. You're a man of faith. Got it. You had every reason and every license to go out there and try to beat the crap out of Roger Clemens that night. You did. And I'm a Yankee fan. And I thought Torrey's explanation was weak. I never bought Roger Clemens' explanation. I thought he was so in the wrong and it was so dangerous. Now, I'm sure from your perspective, it's not like it's a ball coming at you, which is scary enough. It's a bat, which never happens. So you probably weren't in the mental space that you would be in to maybe even do that. Understood. But in hindsight, I'm going to ask you again with a regret. Do you even know it was the World Series? What he did to you? Do you not regret charging the mound or not doing it?
Well, that's interesting. Everything you said before then, I would say, is 100% accurate. And then another thing is, I truly went out there, and if I felt like if he would have said, hey, you know, get the hell out of here, get the F, whatever the case may be, we probably would have ended up fighting. But the fact that there was so much confusion, and he was obviously kind of like the kid that broke the window, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I think he just kind of snapped, and people, and obviously he was a little bit in shock himself. And even Charlie Relliford, I remember the umpire, because he said, oh, I thought it was the ball. And then Charlie looked at me and goes, what is he talking about? And I was like, I don't know. it was bizarre. So I think the fact that it was so confusing and shocking, but I can assure you, you know, if I was walking out there and he would have said, you know, go back in the box, get whatever the case, or started becoming more aggressive, we probably would have ended up fighting, and God knows what would have happened. I mean, he's a big guy. I'm a big guy. Who knows? It could have been one way or the other. But I also, in the back of my mind, felt like, you know, if I would have got dumped or thrown out of a World Series game and my spot came up late in the game with a couple guys on, then it could have been a different story as well. People would have been like, you're selfish. You were too proud, you were too macho, and you should have came up, you know, you hurt your team by, you know, attacking him or whatever the case may be. So fortunately, I had the presence of mind and realized, listen, you know, I kind of had to remain calm. And if he was coming at me or being aggressive, like, go, you know, saying profanity, we probably would have ended up. But since there was that confusion and there wasn't that sort of intense moment, it unfolded the way it did.
God, it still gets me going emotionally because I remember the initiation of it during the day-night doubleheader. And when he drilled you in the head, I took a wiffle ball back to my stereo because I was so angry that happened. I did. I broke in my mouth. I was like, what are you doing? We got you that for Christmas. I busted. I could not. Now, I admit, unlike you, Mike, I couldn't keep my emotions in check. So I give you credit, but it was it was clearly on purpose. You owned Clemens every time you faced him.
Owned him.
He comes up and in, hits you in the head. You fall back. The eyes are rolling back. It was scary, obviously. And I was livid. And then the follow-up to that was the Subway Series. So emotions were running high. I do, on one aspect, give you credit for standing cool. Somebody on the bench could have done something about it. Like, it was just a weird situation. It was unfortunate, more so that the Mets ended up losing the game. As you said, you hit the bomb off of Nelson. Jay Payton hit a home run off of Rivera, but unfortunately it wasn't enough in that game. And it was, you know, look, you ended up losing the series, but people reference that moment. I'll tell you this, Mike, to this day, I don't know where your relationship is with Clemens. I'd take him out. If I see him on site, I'm going at him.
Have you seen him?
Well, right now it would probably look like two old cows rolling in the field if we were to, it would be like no one would pay attention, but or on the golf course. I think the interesting thing was that whole series for us really didn't get off to a good start, because you remember the Todd Zeal home run that just literally was like 3 inches from going out.
Did you see, Mike, see Vientos last night, his home run that hit the top of the wall?
I was there, and it was great.
So I'm sitting next to Zeal last night at SNY, and instantly he goes, now why couldn't mine have done that in the World Series?
Yeah, exactly. And Timo Perez, you know, getting thrown out, I think he just obviously had a little bit of a brain cramp there, and just it was because we had momentum going into that series, and I feel that's the biggest regret for me is I feel like if we would have kept that momentum and that ball would have gone out, it's just one of those things. But you know, as a player, you gotta, I say this as a man of faith, you just gotta thank God for what you have, not for what you don't have. And we had a great team and great memories, and even though that was a very frustrating moment and a lot of things could have happened differently, it is the past. And you know, fortunately the team's at this point is playing better, and hopefully they can kind of scratch into the playoffs this year or further, and hopefully, you know, win a World Series. It's been a long time for the Mets, so hopefully we can get another one.
BT and Sal on the Fan with Mike Piazza, WFAN, WFAN FM, WFAN HD1, New York, and Odyssey Sports Station.
So, Mike, before we let you go, and you kind of let us there here, as Mike Piazza, of course, BT and Sal on the Fan, you say you hope the Mets can become a playoff team. You know what a playoff team looks like. You know what one doesn't. Not that that's always accurate. You can be, you know, betrayed sometimes by what you think you see or know. Top to bottom, though, the bad start, how hot they are now, does this Mets team look like a playoff team?
Well, listen, to back up a little bit, I think obviously the criteria has changed a lot since when I played. There's more chances to get in. And as you've seen in the last few years, a lot of teams that have been really highly regarded going in and have good records have been beaten in the first round, because on any given day, any team can win a short series. But I've seen them at their best. I think they're a good team when they're playing well. I think they just have to stay away from those tough moments. I'd love to see a couple of guys, you know, start to get it going, if that makes sense, and get a little more momentum. And again, you know, that was a tough game last night with the bullpen. The bullpen has to be healthy. I'm avoiding a yes or no question.
We can tell. It sounds like no.
Are they capable? Are they capable of reaching the playoffs? I think they are, but they still have to work on some things, and they have to really have that team come together and gel, and they have to do the little things well. But the way it's set up, you never know. If they can keep playing at this pace or for a while and limp back and get into that situation, it seems like there's a lot of teams that can do it. But I think, why not the Mets? Why not?
You know, Mike, it is a pleasure talking to you. I've had the fortune of meeting you a couple of times. I've told you how much I love you. When the Mets, and this is a true story, I don't know, BT, if I told you this, and I might have told Mike, but maybe not. I broke up with my first ever girlfriend around May 18th, 1998, something around there. And the Mets traded for Mike Piazza May 22nd, 1998. Mike, that's a trade I'd make every single time. Thank you for the memories. You know, who cares? See you, Marissa. We got Mike Piazza. Mike, seriously, thank you so much for all the moments you provided. It's a pleasure to be able to talk to you. It's been a pleasure to be able to meet you a couple of different times. We love you, and thank you again for your time today. We really appreciate it. There you have it.
Thank you for having me on, guys. God bless, okay? Take care, and I'll see you soon.
There you go.
That is today's call of the day. Mike Piazza, of course. It's brought to you by Ramsey Mazda. Choose wisely. Choose Ramsey Mazda. Did I tell you that one before? That is a true story.
I did know that. Oh, okay. I did know that. I mean, listen, you're talking about no water, Johnny Bench, Josh Gibson, Gary Carter, Pudge, Yogi, Beyonce. I mean,
one of the great catches of all time.
Well, that's no, there's no doubt. That's why I said, you know, there's layers to the Hall of Fame, and Mike is indisputably on the first line. I mean, he was a righty power hitter who hit 355.
Yeah, I know. Just the Mets version
was amazing. The Dodgers version was better.
I mean, stats-wise, you're talking about.
Well, that's what I mean.
Well,
in terms of his
average.
I mean, he hit 350.
The moments, getting to a World Series.
I'm talking about just the stats.
God,
what a great
just,
hitter.
Great and how about hitter. The fact, though, that he had an
good
answer.
Guy, too.
I like that he had an answer for why he was able to produce in those big moments.
Yeah.
It wasn't just, well, you know, some guys get lucky.
It worked out for me. Like,
no. There was preparation. There was desire to be up in those spots. And I'm telling you, I referenced 15 of them in the few minutes that we talked to him. So there were endless of those. Regular season, postseason, Subway Series, didn't matter. Even, as a matter of fact, I didn't mention this, when he came back to Shea Stadium as a member of the Padres. And I remember going to the game cheering for Piazza in 2006.
Okay.
And he hit two homers.
He hit 22 home runs that year for the Padres.
I was hoping
too.
He was hitting a third home run. I loved him that much. Evan, you got on me. Evan and Joe were killing me for that.
Yeah.
At the time, how could you root for Piazza? I'm like, because I love him. What do you mean? I wish he hit three home runs. But every moment that he came, almost everyone, except that game five.
Nobody, it's baseball, dude.
I'm saying, you're
going to make some outs.
Well,
I hate to break it to you.
I know, but
even though it's Mike Piazza.
The one against Mariano would have been nice in game five.
When I was hit, I thought it was gone.
That's what I'm saying.
Everybody, although funny, Mariano didn't necessarily think it was gone. Well, I've heard different versions. Bernie thought he had it. Mike wasn't quite sure. Listen, first full year, 318, 319, 346, 336, 362. He hit 362 as a 28-year-old catcher. 362.
Yeah, I mean,
he was insane with the Dodgers and the Mets, too. And listen, Piazza, one of those guys like Doc and Darryl and David Wright. Like, I love Piazza. And I love Clemens, too. But when it comes to that situation, I always thought Clemens was full of it because the explanation made no sense. All right, so you thought it was the baseball. So you throw the baseball at Mike Piazza? Either way, you're running the risk of throwing the ball into the dugout and him getting an extra base, number one. Or you're completely disrespecting him by throwing a spherical object at him
right. Instead
of a jagged edge. I want to straddle this line delicately because I love Piazza. I'd lost an ounce of respect from when he didn't charge that mound.
But don't you
think... I heard his explanation,
right.
And it's interesting. If Clemens is like,
he would have gotten
bleep you, get in the box. Yeah. It's a different energy, and maybe Mike would have, but
if Clemens was yelling, I thought it was the ball lying to everybody.
I know.
So if he personally went at Mike, who was walking toward him...
But he wasn't walking toward him aggressively. Yeah. He was stunned, and rightfully
like,
so.
What's your bleeping problem, or whatever it was?
I'm saying if I'm a Mets fan, if I'm a Mets guy in that moment...
I know.
I'm like, man, he hit you in the head... He almost killed you. Now he's throwing it bad at you. I don't care what game of the World Series it is. You got to go try to lay him out.
You're right. And,
you have to.
And I'm somebody who was literally about to jump out of the seats in the stands and do whatever I could to do my part. However, he did bring up an interesting point that I never really thought about. Mm. If he does go at Clemens and they both get ejected and Piazza's spot comes up in a big spot, you know what's going to happen. The fans and media would be saying, hey, he's selfish. You got to have better control of your emotions. You can't go. That would have been
is
the story,
really,
right?
Okay, true. But is Mike, I can't prove one way or the other, is Mike truly thinking that in the moment? I think
a part of him's thinking, I'm not getting kicked out of the World Series.
I don't think he is. I can never prove that. Yeah. I don't think he is. Honestly, I don't think he wanted a piece of Roger.
Come on.
I don't.
Come on.
I don't. I don't.
Come on, man. I meant what I said. See, Roger, it's on. I'll take a piece of him.
Well, what do you weigh now? 160? What do you weigh?
190. Yeah, 190?
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I mean, all right, maybe you pose a little problem
and
to his kneecaps.
And we're going to bulk up a little bit, too.
They're right. Both big dudes, and they're both titans in the game. And I love Piazza, but I've got to always remain consistent with my take on that.
I know.
Roger deserved to get his ass handed to him right there.
I know, but it was the World Series.
I get the buts.
Yeah. BT and Sal on the Fan. More of your calls coming up on the other side. 888-808-1019 on the Fan.
This is the sound of captivity. This is the sound of rescue. And this is the sound of freedom. Give Armenia's captive bears a second chance by supporting International Animal Rescue. Call 508-826-1083. or search The Great Bear Rescue to learn more.